left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilar. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get another week going. We are underway. It is Monday, January 20th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're here in our Groundworks downtown studio, and we're available wherever you get your podcasts. Mr. Gilbertson, how we doing?
I'm doing well, and you, buddy?
I'm good, man. If you wanted to find this show on podcast, where could somebody get it?
Apple, Spotify, Seeker.
Yep. Amazon.
All right. Was Google the one that got dropped?
Google doesn't do podcasts anymore, so we don't say that anymore. Not bad.
Apple, Amazon.
Apple, Spotify. Those are the big ones.
Okay.
Then Amazon, and then Seeker.
And wherever you get your podcasts.
Not bad.
In training. I've got, like, you know when you see the, like, driver in training on the...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's me on the radio.
Big sign?
Yeah, big sign cutting people off. That's me.
Random braking in the middle of, traffic. Hopefully you had a good weekend. Hopefully you got a good week ahead. And all things considered, I think you could call that a pretty decent road trip for the Flames, because when you take a look at the travel, when you take a look at the workload, when you take a look at everything that went into that four-game trip through the Central Division, four games in six nights, when you count in that home game, five games in eight nights, travel between every single one, a few instances of three games and four nights, had a back-to-back in there, they go 2-2, they open the door a little bit for St. Louis, but it started well in Chicago, ended with a really nice result in Winnipeg, and at the end of the trip, the Flames still in a playoff spot, holding down that final wild card position in the Western Conference on Vancouver and St. Louis, and they didn't fall out of that wild card spot during the trip either. So all those things considered, with all of the circumstances, and you can say making excuses, whatever. That was a decent road trip when it's all said and done, with some good and some bad, which we'll get to here fairly shortly.
It's amazing the impact that last game can have, right?
For sure.
Because if you don't go in there on the strength of a Dustin Wolf masterclass and steal 2 points from Winnipeg, I think we're having a much different conversation. I do think that two-game stretch in St. Louis had a lot of dud qualities to it, and yet I agree with you. To come home 2-2 on that trip, not a murderer's row of opponents, but, you know, places that you've had some trouble winning and solid enough opposition, especially in the Blues and Winnipeg Jets, I think you take 2-2. I really do. I think you'd be happy with that in that circumstance.
Yeah, and I think that's when, you know, I didn't like five of the six periods against St. Louis, honestly, but the game against Chicago, they generated some offense. That hasn't been what you would call the norm.
Yeah.
And they found a way in Winnipeg on the back of, as you called it, a Dustin Wolf masterclass. And for one of the first times all season, I can think of one time, and if I went and I really racked my brain, I could maybe come up with more, but it has not been very often that this team has stolen games.
No.
A lot of times this year, they've lost the games that they were the worst, the second best team in. A lot of times when they're second best, they lose, and a lot of times when they're the better group, they win. And I can think of a few times when, you know, the result, a good effort hasn't gone their way, like that home game against Nashville. The last one is the most recent example and one of the only examples I can think of where they were clearly the better group and didn't win.
Yeah.
And Sunday in Winnipeg, one of the only examples where I felt like they were clearly second best and still found a way to win. It's been a weird season like that.
And I think sometimes we can say, oh, well, the Calgary Flames stole that game, and it sounds like such a... It sounds so negative, right?
It does.
It really sounds
but
like,
it's actually not.
You barely deserved it. When you're a team that is on that playoff bubble, when you're a team that had the external expectations that this Flames team had, and you're going up against the best team in the Western Conference, sometimes you are going to need your goalie to steal it. And I don't think you apologize on your way out of Winnipeg. You know, friendly Manitoba, you're always apologizing for something because the people there are so darn nice. But I don't think you're apologizing on your way out for the way Dustin Wolfe played.
Nope.
Just like the Nashville Predators weren't apologizing on their way out a few weeks ago because the Calgary Flames failed to, you know, put a nail in them early because they couldn't generate any offense. And so I think you just tip your cap to your goalie who is still on your roster.
I believe last time I looked, he counts against the salary cap the same way skaters count against the salary cap.
Are we still worried about that two-way deal, or do we think he's staying in the NHL?
Dustin Wolfe?
Yeah.
Talk to me at the end of the season.
Okay.
No, I honestly, like, your goalie is... That's pretty funny. Your goalie is part of your team, and sometimes... How many times have the Edmonton Oilers had to rely on Connor McDavid to win a hockey game, right? Like, how many times has Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon or Nikita Kucherov or the best skaters
point,
in the
right?
How many times have they put their team on their back to win a game?
Jeez, Cale Makar stole another one for the Avalanche.
Yeah, we don't ever say that, right?
It's a good point.
Goalie's part of it. And honestly, you know, going back to the schedule, so when you take into account how and I know that everybody's like, oh, you make excuses with the schedule. No, you don't. And I say this all the time, but Mike Keenan said something. The only thing that he ever said that made sense in his 2 years as head coach of this team, he said, there are not excuses, there are reasons. And you know what? When you're getting your behind handed to you and being put through a meat grinder like the Flames were on this trip and the travel and the workload, every team goes through it, and I see lots on Twitter. I know Oilers media has been talking about how hard their last trip was, all that type of stuff. Every team goes through grueling stretches of their schedule, and every team has to deal with what the Flames just did. And so when you're a team that does not have a lot of high-powered offense, when it is a struggle to score, when you are on the back stretch, the final game before an extended period of time off, at the very end of an absolute grind of a schedule, yeah, you know what? Sometimes you got to rope-a-dope your way to a win. Sometimes you got to count on your goaltender to win, and that isn't a bad thing. Like, it's not like that's the norm for this group. Like, 2014-15, that was. They rope-a-doped everything. Well, this year, they haven't done that a whole lot. And so one night against the best team in the conference, who does that to a lot of teams, you didn't let him, and Dustin Wolfe didn't let him, and you still found a way to score a couple of goals, and you still found a way to rise to the occasion on a huge second period power play, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So no, by no means is that trying to take credit away from them. It just that's calling a fact a fact.
Yeah.
They were on their heels all night. They had their show ran at times, but they didn't lose. And sometimes when you've got your C game, and sometimes when you're running on empty, you've got to still find ways to steal games, and that's an important part of making the playoffs.
Yeah, and I just think back to how many times over the years I've written, oh, the Flames wasted a good goaltending performance from so-and-so. How many times have you been hosting the post-game show and been saying or taking calls about how the Flames got great goaltending from whomever it might have been and yet couldn't take advantage of it? That's the alternative, right? That's what they didn't do in Winnipeg. And to finish off the road trip, and I think we'll get into it here. I know that there were more positives than just Dustin Wolfe on that trip, but the way he backstopped the team in Winnipeg really allows you to come home feeling good about how things went.
So let's get into... because that was a grueling stretch, and now the Flames don't play again till Thursday when they've got the Buffalo Sabres in at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Let's go through the good and the bad of this road trip, and you can even count in the game against Los Angeles if you want to. Like, what the good and the bad of this road trip dating back to maybe last Saturday, because that was kind of like game one of a trip, or game three or game four of like an 8-game trip, because they were gone for a little bit,
yeah,
came back for one, then back on the road.
So
spent more time in St. Louis than they did at home, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So last week in a bit, the good and the bad. And we can just go back and forth with good and bad. And maybe we'll start with the obvious good. And that is goaltending. And led by Dustin Wolf, no question. I'll give honorable mention to Vladar because I thought that was a quality start from him. Tuesday night in St. Louis gave the team an opportunity to win. They had nothing, but he gave the team an opportunity to win on Tuesday. But Dustin Wolf, the game that he played Monday in Chicago, pretty good. The game that he played Thursday in St. Louis, yeah, not his best. But they made the right call by going back to him. We've been talking about them using him like a number one for a period of time here. Well, part of being a number one is you get the opportunity after a not so great effort to go right back in. And Thursday against the Blues, there were one or two the Flames didn't like, that Wolf didn't like, that everybody didn't like. And he goes right back in and puts together in my opinion, the greatest game he's played in the NHL to this point. He was spectacular against the Jets. And that's the mark of a guy that you want to keep rolling out, is that every good goalie in this league has rough nights. Vasilevsky and Hellebuck, and you point to any of the other high-end goalies in this league, they're going to have off nights over the course of 82 games, but it's what they do in response. And, well, I think we just saw what Wolf did in response on Saturday night.
And I know Ryan Huska mentioned it immediately after Thursday's game. He started to see the response long before that game ended, right? We were all, I think, kind of wondering, and the Calgary Flames have still not hooked a goaltender this season. But I think, and I remember Greg Millen wondering aloud about it on the broadcast. Thursday, when it was 3-0 after one, you kind of thought, geez, would they give them the old heave-ho here? More to get the team going than anything, but is that perhaps coming? And they stuck with Dustin Wolf, and I thought the response started early. Like, he gave his team every chance to hang around in that second period and even into the third. I know we're giving the Flames a lot of credit for playing better hockey when the Blues went into a shell in that second period, but I could quite honestly throw that out the window. Like, that team was outclassed on Thursday night. And the way Dustin Wolf battled to keep them in, I thought that was the makings of the response right there. The other thing is, like, the goal we all hated was the Colton Parayko goal, right? And if you go back, because I wrote something about this that night, so I watched that goal several times.
Uh-huh.
You know, the sequence starts with Kevin Ball flubbing a clearing attempt. And then Kevin Ball, Jonathan Huberdeau, and Nazem Kadri are all in a battle, along the boards. They can't win it. Puck goes to the other side. Martin Pospisil gives a really soft, lazy stick check attempt on Fowler, steps around him, passes it over to Parayko. Huberdeau's not on that point because he's trying to help somewhere else. Like, it was a garbage goal for the goalie, but, like, it was a comedy of errors, right? Every single spot on the ice, a Flame either didn't win his battle or wasn't doing or standing where it was supposed to be. You know, I wrote something about it, and someone on social media with low reading comprehension said, oh, blaming Wolf. No, actually, the exact opposite. What? Go watch. Every single play here it's not what you need. And so I don't care whether you're a rookie goalie who's just making a name for himself in the league. I don't care if you've been in the league for 10 years and you're one of the very best in the business. If your team misses that many assignments, bad goals are going to happen.
And that was not a loss all on the goalie.
Not at all.
I mean, they were dreadful in that first period, which was really disappointing. Because of the way that they were talking about making adjustments and, hey, it feels like a playoff series. We got to respond.
Right.
And it came out like that.
Well, and so let's bounce a little on the good and bad, because the worst of the bad was that first period Thursday.
Yes.
And so is that more of a big picture concern for you, or can you flush that?
I can flush that because, at least I think I can, because they haven't had a lot of periods like that this year. Like, they're over the course of 45 games,
which would be 135 plus periods. They have not had a lot of those. You know, there is the few in Vegas. There's a few in Utah. There was definitely some stretches in that first period in Winnipeg. I mean, but there's not been a lot of periods where they've just been so completely out of it, right? There have been lots where they've been outscored, or lots where they haven't been the better group, but like to be that clearly outclassed, have not been a lot of those. So I think I can flush that.
The only pause I would have is you worry about the response given the magnitude of the game. And the Flames were, so they lose Tuesday night in St. Louis. They're off Wednesday in St. Louis. You listen to all the audio coming out of Morning Skate or wherever it would have been. It was all about getting off to a good start.
Yep.
And it was all about making sure that St. Louis couldn't close valuable ground in the wild card race. Here's something we've been talking about for weeks, that we know we need more first period goals. We have to be a team that capitalizes early, blah, blah, blah. And so to come out after all that talk with a first period like that, I don't think I'm going to say it worries me just yet, but that's the sort of game that's the old cliche, you better be up for this one. And the fact that the Calgary Flames fell so flat in that game, if it's not concerning just yet, it's at least troubling.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Although just because it had been so long since we'd seen a period quite like that,
yeah.
I'll give them a slight benefit.
Sure.
Of the doubt.
And if we don't see another rotten first period for a dozen games, I'm not concerned about it. I think it's probably in the back of your head the next time you so obviously need a good first period.
Right. Here's another bad.
So negative.
Hey, you're the one who I went good first, and then you went right to bad. But yes, they were not anywhere near as strong defensively the last three games as what we're used to.
Yeah.
They were bleeding a lot of chances. 5-on-5, listen to this, in three straight games, 5-on-5 slot opportunities, 8-3 Blues, 14-5 Blues, 13-3 Jets. So that's about 35-11 over the course of three games in nine periods. You're not going to win
that
most
was
games.
5-on-5.
5-on-5 high dangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew.
The medium dangers are pretty slanted as well.
How many high dangers did they get credit for on Thursday?
Three. On Thursday?
Sorry.
Five.
Tuesday was three?
Three Tuesday, five Thursday, three Saturday.
Whew.
And only a few more on the power play.
Yeah.
So it's not even like the power play gave them a huge boost. And then the opposing power plays gave the other teams pretty big boost. They just that they did not protect the way that we're used to. And so that could very well have been a product of fatigue and the schedule and all that type of stuff. But now they've got 4 days without a game. They didn't practice Sunday. Ryan Huska, Michael Backlund, I'm guessing, talked about it, and they said, we need another day off. They did not practice on Monday. So they were clearly beat. So now you want to see them back to the don't give you a whole lot team that we're used to starting Thursday against Buffalo. So that was not something that I was a little surprised to see it as a lot, because there have not been a lot of nights where 5-on-5 they're that kind of it's that slanted.
I mean, you could sort of go through and pick one line each night that really had a rotten night too.
Yep.
And that part of the, I suppose, recipe for success for this team is that they can't have a whole lot of passengers. And I think you could go, and I just singled out forward lines, but you could include the D too. I think you could go through all of those games and come up with a chunky enough list of guys that weren't going. Fair?
Yep.
You want another good? Should I bring some positivity to these proceedings?
No, I prefer when you're negative. No, I'm kidding. What do you got?
Is 4 points in four NHL games good?
Yeah, I have that written down right here. Rory Karens. He looks through 12 NHL periods,
He looks like he can hang at this level. And nothing he does is flashy.
No.
Nothing he does is going to really jump off the page in an ooh-ah way. But I can point to like 8 or 9 really savvy plays that he's made in 4 games that you don't make unless you have high-end hockey IQ. The hockey sense that this guy has in all 3 facets of the game, like all 3 zones, I've been really impressed by it. And that's what's allowed him to not look out of place, because he doesn't skate at an elite level for an NHLer. He doesn't have, you know, this ridiculous
not
amount
the strongest
of skill.
Guy.
No, but he puts himself in really good spots. He makes really smart plays with the puck. I mean, I look at Andrei Kuzmenko's goal that ends up being the winner on Saturday. That's 3. Well, it's 2 really, really smart plays, mm-hmm. and the first one's by Cairns, and it's a second assist, but I think it was as valuable as the primary assist. He makes a great play at the blue line to recognize where pressure is and to recognize where bodies are, and he makes a great cut at the entry and swings it over to Blake Coleman, and then Coleman, who we know is as smart as they come, he whips it over to Kuzmenko away from pressure. Megan Mickelson's been talking about more weak side opportunities while Blake Coleman sees weak side all day. Kuzmenko's got time on the weak side, so he swings it across, puts it right on his tip, and Kuzmenko walks right down Main Street and just kills that puck to make it 2-0. So but that doesn't happen unless Cairns makes a really, really savvy play at the offensive blue line. And he's made a lot of those plays, some that have led to goals, some that haven't.
And I'm really glad you said that, because I had someone say to me, oh, well, it's 3, point per game, but it's 3 secondary assists. And it is 3 secondary assists, but if you go watch those plays, they don't happen without him, right? 2 of his assists so far, 1 on Jacob Pelche's second of the night in Chicago, 1 in St. Louis. 2 of those happen because of Cairns' work down low. Yep. And you did a good job of setting up the 1 on the power play. And so it's funny, because if you just watch and forget about the 4 assists, he's not blowing you away, but he just sort of blends in. And for a guy who's played 4 games, that sounds like such an insult. And to say that a guy who's only played 4 games in the NHL is blending in is about as big a compliment as you can pay.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know what this was going to look like. We talked about, okay, well, what are the expectations for Rory Cairns? How did this guy go from not so long ago in the ECHL to AHL scoring leader? What might it look like in the NHL? Man, the smarts just, they're so subtly obvious. And that's the ultimate oxymoron. But the more you watch, it's just like, oh, well, there's another sneaky good play.
Yep.
Oh, there he is right where you need him in that situation. Oh, not the strongest guy, but just used his body effectively to win another battle down low. And I don't know how many other guys in the Flames locker room could say that they had 4 points through 4 NHL games. And that's not me sitting here predicting that Rory Cairns is going to average 82 for the next 5 seasons, but you can't knock a guy who just finds a way to contribute. And how many goals did the Flames score on that road trip? 10?
Yeah.
He was in on 4 of them.
40% of them.
Seems good.
Yep. And they scored 5 in the last 3 games, and he was in on
2 of those.
40% of those as well. 2 of the 5. So, yeah, I think he'll take that for sure. Here's I've got another positive for you.
Okay, bring it on.
I am starting to see, and I don't, I know that not everybody is, because I still see lots of people asking for this guy to be sat down. Like, why do you guys keep on talking about, Kuzmenko, but what about Sharangovich? He should be sitting too. Well, the last couple weeks, Sharangovich looks a whole lot more like himself, and I liked what I saw from him for the most part on that road trip. 2 goals in 4 games on that trip. He was shooting it a whole lot more. He was getting more attempts. And he was doing that all while playing center, which, hey, I was the of everybody on this program between you and Vix and Wilsey, you know, kind of like the regular voices that we talk to daily on this program. I was the most out and the most against Sharon Govich being at center. And I get why he's there again, because they've kind of run out of options with all the injuries they've sustained at that position plus waivers. But he's done a pretty good job. Like, I'll give him a lot of credit for what he's been able to do. And so I think that that is something that needs to be taken into account. I've thought he's played pretty well. I mean, his faceoff percentage has taken a significant step forward.
All season, really.
Yeah. Even when he's been playing the wing, he's really dug in the faceoff dot. Yeah, I've liked a lot of Sharon Govich over the last little bit. He's really starting to resemble more and more like the guy that was such an impact maker for him last year. He's shooting it. He's killing penalties again. He looks dangerous. Like that goal that he scored in St. Louis, like that was vintage. Great work from Cairns, great work from Pelche to make it happen. But that was kind of vintage Sharon Govich, right? Like he used two guys, a screen, some weird angle. Most guys aren't trying that to like bend it through guys. And yet he does and goes ping down. And again, if you're Hofer that night, you're like, what am I supposed to do with
yeah.
that? And you want to see more goalies shrugging their shoulders and saying, what do you want me to do with that shot? He has not been doing it anywhere near as much, but more recently, I've felt like there's a lot to like about Sharon Govich, which could be a huge thing for this team here in the next little while.
I've been thinking a lot about the conversations I had and we had with Jonathan Huberdeau at the start of the season about the impact of being on the penalty kill, feeling a little bit more valuable to your team, feeling like there was another way you could impact it, feeling like you were a little more involved in the game because you weren't sitting on the bench for extended stretches of special teams and you know, in particular or specifically shorthanded work. Like I think back to all those conversations and I don't necessarily think it's a coincidence that Yegor Sharangovich's game has started to arrow upward a little bit since, I shouldn't even say a little bit, I think arrow upward significantly since he's been back on the penalty kill. He has played much, much better hockey. Like there was a stretch that you were wondering already how that contract extension yep. was going to age. And I think we're seeing more of the guy that the Flames thought they were re-upping.
Since the Anaheim game, when Zeri went down and Sharon Govich got moved to the middle, 11 shot attempts, 5 shot attempts, 5 shot attempts, 5 shot attempts, 7 shot attempts, 4 shot attempts. That is mm-hmm. what you need to see from Sharon Govich on a regular basis. Be more of a volume guy, because that shot plus volume is going to start to go in.
And it's a good sign that he's generating more of those from the middle, because in his...
He kind of got lost in the middle last year, didn't he?
Yeah, especially in the second half of the season. Like, throw out the fourth line stuff at the start of the year, but when he got put back there after the Elias Lindholm trade, there were nights where it's like he can't get a shot off from yeah. the middle. He's just not getting enough time and space at that position, and yet he seems to be more effectively finding that space in this latest stint at center. I think that's a really good sign in combination with the faceoff gains you mentioned. He has their best faceoff stats right now.
Which you could have told me, hey, Sharon Govich is going to be their best faceoff guy. I would have been like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. No chance.
What are you smoking?
now, you know, he comes home from the road trip at 48.7% on the trip. You never want your best faceoff guy to have a 4 at the start of the percentage, but yeah. Good on Yegor. Just continues to be a struggle.
What do we got here at 960 before we take our first pause? Matt says, stuck in Oilerland, boys, regarding Rory, the thing is every time there's an assist, there's a goal. He makes a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. That was going to be, let me throw a mini good in, because we don't have time to fully flesh it out, but impressive road trip for Jacob Pelche.
Agreed. Francesca says, 10 goals in 4 games. Yikes. Fair.
pretty close to the average, wouldn't it be?
It's kind of what we're used to.
Yeah.
This reads they've played a lot of hockey. They're tired. I think you'll see one of the team's best performances Thursday, mentally and physically rested. That can make the difference. We'll see. This is, I think, part of the issue with the Flames right now is the majority of other teams are starting to play playoff hockey. We haven't seen the urgency from Calgary. They're still playing November hockey. The only thing I'd say about that is that they've kind of been playing that brand and needing to be playing with that type of desperation all along just to be where they are. Ryan Huska keeps saying that he thinks they've got another level. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we're into the third quarter of the season and the second half of the season, now that we're into the back stretch, now it's time to show that, right?
Well, and I think, and I'm sure I'm sort of dovetailing with the texter here, I think that was my frustration with what we saw in St. Louis. Yes, you had an excuse on the second end of a back-to-back to look a little tired. Okay, sort of a weird scenario. As you said, haven't had a real stinker of a period for a while, so maybe you throw out that first on Thursday, and yet I find myself thinking, okay, when you get into these games that are going to be the most indicative of a playoff atmosphere just because of what the stakes are. And those two games in St. Louis were pretty close to the top of that list so far this season. You'd like to see more. And I think that's what the texter's saying. And I would certainly agree with that. I understand perhaps the reasons we didn't see more, but in that scenario, you would have liked them to find that other level.
We're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Wes. I'm Pat, and the Four Nations face-off is coming. It starts on February 12th. It goes from Feb 12th to 20th in Montreal and Boston, Canada, Finland, Sweden, and the United States. And we're a proud partner of the event and giving you the chance to win a VIP trip to watch a game through Rogers Beyond the Seat, the national program that brings customers the best sports and entertainment experiences across the country. Rogers is giving away four pairs of tickets, plus travel and accommodations to the Four Nations, with a new winner being picked every week until February 7th. So if you want to go, learn more and enter to win at rogers.com/Four Nations. Fans in Canada can watch every game of the Four Nations face-off exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. So if you want to go, learn more and enter to win, go to rogers.com/Four Nations. One more time, rogers.com/Four Nations.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Happy Monday, and time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Well, gentlemen, the Daily Flames Roundtable, by the way, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Did I read that? Cam, did I read it already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did? One of those days. By Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.
And we just love them.
Just in case. We do love them. it's one of those days. Hi, Wilsey. Guys, the Flames start the week in a playoff spot. They currently hold down the final wildcard spot in the Western Conference. Over at Money Puck, they changed their formula a little bit midway through the season, and the Flames jumped all the way to 63.8% in terms of their odds to make the playoffs, eighth best in the conference, way ahead of the two teams chasing them, Vancouver and St. Louis, who are both under 30%. Now, you know, the Money Puck odds are what they are. They don't really mean anything, but they're fun to track. But what does mean something is that on January 20th, well into the second half and third quarter of the season, the Flames are holding down a playoff spot and protecting from a couple of teams chasing them. Just from kind of a psyche standpoint, gentlemen, how important is that? Wilsey, I know you've asked a lot of players this throughout the year, but like, how important is it this late in the season for them to remain holding down a playoff spot?
Well, first of all, Pat, I've been having one of those days for like 3 days.
I know.
So
it's about Friday, I hear.
Yeah. So hang in there. You'll get through the day. Better days ahead. But I think it's huge for the Flames to be in the position they're in, because very few people thought they would fight for a playoff spot, let alone be in one 45 games into the season. And how did they get there? Well, they got off to a great start, the best six-game start in the history of the franchise. And yeah, they've had some ups and downs, but no prolonged losing streaks and, you know, some long winning and point streaks. And you needed probably one or two teams to not be as good as you thought they were going to be. And the Canucks certainly fit that bill. I had them fighting with the Oilers for first in the Pacific Division before the season started. And here we are 45 games into the Calgary season and the Vancouver season. And the Flames are 1 point ahead of the Canucks in the Pacific Division standing. So I think it's huge, because that belief that I think the Flames started to build really with that 6-5 overtime victory over the Canucks in the season opener on October 9th, when, you know, they fell behind 4-1 in the first period and then took all those penalties trying to get back at JT Miller for that hit on Kevin Rooney. And when they settled themselves down and settled into the game in the second and third periods, they battled back, tied it, and then found a way to win it in overtime. And I really think that that's where it all started. But then you get the good start to the season, you build some more belief, you build some more confidence. And I think they've really just continued to do that throughout the season. And the fact that they're protecting a spot and not chasing a spot, I think that's huge as well, because there are some good teams right around them, some good teams just ahead of them, some good teams just behind them. And what you want to do is just keep your head above water and force those teams to be chasing you, because I think it can really suck a lot of energy out of you to be chasing in games and to be chasing in season. So I think internally it's huge, and externally it could be pretty important as well, because we really wondered where Craig Conroy was going to go this season. Would he be a buyer? Would he be a seller heading towards the deadline? I think most felt like he would probably be a seller, but definitely not a buyer. And now I wonder if you'll stand pat or maybe do some buying if his team remains in a playoff spot between now and the deadline. So we'll have to see how things play out, but they're in a great spot, and I think that's super important.
From my vantage point, guys, the most important part of being in a playoff spot at this juncture and even sort of maintaining it through some of the speed bumps, I suppose, on this past road trip, just sitting in that spot to me is so important for the buy-in to what is a really grueling and taxing style of hockey. And I think we saw probably the most obvious example in Thursday's opening period in St. Louis of what happens when this team isn't committed to that style of play, and what happens if they're not bought into sort of the really grimy details of how they need to have success. And we watched another team that's not lighting up the standings kind of run roughshod over them in that first period because they weren't ready to play the way that they know they need to play. And you can throw that first period out if you don't see it very often. And I think being in that playoff spot today, waking up in that playoff spot Friday, despite a disappointing performance in St. Louis, whatever it might be, I think is so important for buy-in. And I really like the way that Ryan Huska has sort of managed the rest. We've seen this team take a ton of off days, but I think when you play that double reload and you play a system that just takes a real toll energy-wise, I think that buy-in is going to be so important from here till wherever this thing's going. And the longer you're in that playoff spot, I think the easier it is to invest in it.
Yep. And there's two things. Number one, and they're both like mental psyche type things. And one of them is just that, in that I think it continues to reinforce the importance and the belief in the way they're playing and the way that they've been going about things. And so that I think is massive, and you just did a great job of explaining it. So I need to add much more to that, because I think it's very well said. And then the second part, guys, is that I do think there is like an inherent weight lifted off the shoulders when you are in control of your own destiny. Like, I know Flames fans will be watching the out of town scoreboard and all that type of stuff, but right now inside that room, if the Flames take care of what they need to do, they don't really need to care about. And how many times have we had to be talking about, you know, how many times have different people asked the Flames, like, oh, well, you know, like the team that you're chasing is starting to struggle. Does that open the door? They don't have to worry about that. You know, they can just take care of their business, and they run the show. They kind of have their own path ahead of them. And if they follow that path, they'll be playing past whatever mid-April. And so that I think is a big, I've talked to enough players that the chasing mentality can take a toll. The protecting mentality doesn't take that same type of toll. The controlling your own destiny is a whole lot better than needing to still win and take care of your own business and all cross your fingers and see what other teams are doing. So that's another, I think, big benefit to this whole thing. And it, to me, it's all mental. It's all just the overall psyche of the team, Wilsey. But those two things, I think, are massive as we're now well into the second half of the season.
Yeah, huge. And Wes, you talked about buy-in, and I think really buy-in can be described in a couple of different ways, the way you described it. But I also think about the difference in buy-in from last season to this season. How bought in did the team look last season? Like, to me, really not at all. And that's not, you know, targeting any individual player, but just the team in general. And I think the reason for that was probably two things. Number one, all of those pending UFAs and that black cloud that really followed the team around all season long, and then a terrible start to the season.
Right.
2-7-1 in the first 10 games, and it felt like they were out of the playoff race before we got to the 10-game mark, which is crazy. And that just makes for a long season. This season, they don't have that black cloud of all the pending UFAs, and they get off to a fantastic start. And I know they've fallen out of a playoff spot briefly on two or three occasions this season, but for most of the season, they've been in a playoff spot. And Pat, to your point, protecting one, it's got to feel way easier mentally for the team than trying to chase down a playoff spot and hoping to get help from this team and that team. And hey, I'm still looking at the out-of-town scoreboard, wondering what teams around the Flames are doing. Are they still ahead of the Canucks? Are they any closer to the Avalanche or the Kings? So there's still that because they're not comfortably in a playoff spot. But when you play the brand of hockey that they do, that takes a real physical toll on you, adding a mental toll to that of having to chase games and chase the season, that might be too much for them to handle. So I think buy-in's been huge. There's clearly been a lot more of it this season, both with how they've handled things and how they've played, and also just feeling good about what they've been doing and getting rewarded for all of their hard work. And you do that with wins, you do that with points. And to this point, the Flames have done a better job than the Canucks and some other teams. So here we are, 45 games in with them sitting in the playoff spot.
If they can protect that playoff spot these next 10 games, like going into their Four Nations break, if they're still sitting in that wild card spot, I am curious because we've all acknowledged that physical toll. I'm really curious what it might do, how it might benefit this Flames team that they do only have one player going to the Four Nations faceoff in Rasmus Anderson. You look at Vancouver and their key guys for as long as they remain their key guys in Elias Pettersson and JT Miller and Quinn Hughes. Those guys are all going to the Four Nations faceoff. You look at the St. Louis Blues, their starting goaltender is going to that tournament and probably has a pretty good chance to be a starting goalie at that tournament as well. And so I do wonder, while we'd all love to see Mackenzie Weegar on the world stage and while we all think that Michael Backlund could have been a good fit for Team Sweden, I do wonder if it becomes a little bit of a blessing in disguise for this Flames team to only have one player as of now heading to that tournament.
Guys, the other question is, go ahead. You got more to say there, Wilsey?
No, I agree 100% with that. It could be a blessing in disguise. And yeah, selfishly, I think we'd all love to see Michael Backlund there and Mackenzie Weegar there. But if they don't go, that's going to mean a couple of weeks of rest for two veteran players who will probably benefit from that for the remainder of the regular season and hopefully the playoffs. So yeah, it's going to be, I guess, tough to watch those games without more Flames in them, but still fun, and hopefully it benefits the team moving forward.
Guys, the other question I wanted to ask on our Daily Flames roundtable, you know, Andre Kuzmenko scores that huge goal on Saturday night to make it 2-0. Big power play goal. It's like, oh, that's what it looks like when this guy shoots the puck. Okay. So he scores a big goal, snaps his goalless drought at 28, ends up being the game winner. But here's the question that, and I don't know if we honestly do have an answer for that. I'm just curious as to where you guys are on this. But, like, what is our confidence level that maybe gets him going a little bit more?
I can't say that I'm confident that it gets him going. I'm hopeful that it gets him going. And yeah, he's got to use his shot. We've been saying that for months. And hopefully him scoring will help him figure that out and start using that shot more. I mean, here's a crazy stat. So going into that game against the Jets on Saturday, Andre Kuzmenko, who I think has the best shot on the team, and that's with all due respect to Matt Coronado, who can fire it, and Yegor Sharangovich, who can shoot it. But Andre Kuzmenko's shot is just such a weapon. He had one shot on goal in the previous eight games he played in. One. And 31 shots in the first 32 games he played in this season. When your best weapon is your shot and you're not using it, how do you put yourself in a position to succeed? He wasn't, I guess, is the answer to that question. So, yeah, I mean, it was great to see him snap a six-game pointless streak dating back to December 8th, and great to see him snap a 28-game goalless streak dating back to October 15th. But now you've got to continue to do the things that put you in a position to succeed Saturday night against the Jets. I'll give Ryan Huska a lot of credit, because when I looked at that four-game road trip, I thought, okay, there's a pretty good chance Andre Kuzmenko is going to play at some point in time. Will it be against the Blackhawks, who are the worst team in the league? No. Will it be in the second half of a back-to-back going Chicago to St. Louis in the first of back-to-back games against the Blues? No. Wasn't in the second game against the Blues coming off a loss. Nope. So in the final game of the road trip, the toughest game of the road trip in Winnipeg against the league co-leading Jets, Ryan Huska not only puts Andre Kuzmenko in the lineup, puts him on the third line in a position to use his skill set and on the power play. And lo and behold, Andre Kuzmenko makes the coach look like an absolute genius. Probably not an easy decision to put him in, especially against a Jets team that plays with the type of structure that they do. But really, in hindsight, a brilliant decision by the Flames head coach. And maybe this is the goal. Maybe this is the game that finally gets him going. And, you know, as we've talked about all season long, the Flames as a team have really struggled to score goals. And if they're going to get to the playoffs, they're going to have to start scoring more. I still believe that, as good as they've been in goal, as good as they've been defensively, they're probably going to have to score more down the stretch to get in. And Andre Kuzmenko can help them do that. We've seen it from Yegor Sharangovich. He went 15 straight games without a goal, the longest stretch of his NHL career. And since scoring, he's got 2 in 3 games. Can Andre Kuzmenko start to be the goal scorer that we saw in his first two seasons in this league when he had 39 goals and then, what was it, 22 or 23 goals? Can he be that type of player, not this season, but from this point moving forward through the rest of the season? If the answer to that question is yes, that is going to be an absolutely huge shot in the arm for the Flames. So I can't sit here and say I'm confident that the old Andre Kuzmenko is back, but I'm hopeful that after getting the monkey off his back on Saturday night, that we might see that guy again.
I'll keep my answer pretty brief here, guys. And I am with Willsy in that I'm, I guess, a little wishy-washy on what this means moving forward. The one thing I'll say is my best guess is that Andre Kuzmenko's lack of confidence at this point is actually less tied to what had been a 3-month scoring drought than it is tied to just not being able to get in the Flames lineup. I think even worse than not being able to produce offensively is a guy being told, you know what, we might be better off if you're just not playing tonight. And so I think what needs to happen next for this to become a positive step for Andre Kuzmenko in regaining some confidence and ultimately regaining some scoring touch is doing what he needs to do to become a regular in the lineup. And so the first step is that the goal, being a game winner, especially being a power play goal, it probably keeps you in for the next game, right? You probably see number 96 against the Buffalo Sabres on Thursday. And I think doing enough to maintain his spot in the lineup, and especially to try and maintain his spot in a middle six role and as a power play guy, I really do think that's an important first step for Kuzmenko before we even worry about when we might see his third goal of the season.
Sometimes it's okay to answer a yes or no question with, I don't know. Like, 'cause I really don't. I have no idea. He's been one of the most confounding players I can remember covering with this team ever. And that's not
that's not even really that's not even really all that much of a shot at him, because or like trying to say like, oh, he's a bad teammate, or not at all, because he actually, you know, you talk to guys in that locker room, you talk to coaching staff, you talk to management, like Kuzmenko cares. Like, this is not, he's not enigmatic in the way that like he's aloof and isn't like, he really, I think the biggest part of that goal on Saturday was that it helped the team massively, and the dude really cares about helping the team. And I think that's what has bothered him the most, is that he hasn't been able to contribute and help the team win games. So, Willsy, I have no idea if it you know, helps turn his season around, if all of a sudden we see him using his shot more or scoring more. I don't know. I really have no idea, because in a lot of ways he is a mystery. But one thing I do know is that he can absolutely hammer that puck, and Eric Comrie had no chance on that shot, because one of the best shots, if not the best shot on the team, leaned into one down Main Street, and it ends up being the game winner. So if it does end up leading to the floodgates opening a little bit, as you said, that's a massive development. My confidence level on it, I don't know. Not high, not non-existent, but not high.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. The thing is, he has the ability to impact games. And Wes, the one thing I would say is, some guys can help you win games if they're not scoring goals. I don't know if Andre Kuzmenko is one of those guys, at least not on a regular basis.
Right.
I think he has to be at least a threat to score night in, night out, for him to really help this team win. Doesn't have to score every single game. We know that, but he's got to be a threat to score. He's got to shoot the puck. He's got to, you know, do something with it in the offensive zone instead of kind of skating himself in circles and turning it over, which we've seen him do too often this season. But we know the guy has the ability to score, and to score a lot at the NHL level. It's been hard to watch him go through what he's gone through this season. I think he's a really good guy. I think he cares. I think his teammates get a kick out of him. He's got this quirky personality, and he makes them, and he makes us, and he makes Flames fans laugh with his interviews. And I do think that this has been a real challenge for him. It's probably the first time in his life that he's gone through anything like this. But you know, hopefully there are brighter days ahead, and you got to take one step forward before you can take two. And you know, I think him scoring a power play goal that winds up being the game winner on Saturday could be that step forward for Andre Kuzmenko. And if that's the case, that's going to be a big boost for a Flames team that's struggled to score in a lot of games this season.
Okay, go rest, or else that threat I sent you over the weekend, I'll make sure I make good on it, all right?
Sounds good, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers, and the Daily Flames Roundtable. Just in case I didn't read it six times prior to starting it, the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.